Thank you so much, Rachel.
Welcome to everyone joining the webinar room. We will give folks a minute to get started. Thank you all for joining today. I was just getting a link ready to put in the chat block, and then we will go ahead and start our presentation. Okay, welcome to today's SNEB webinar. I'm very excited to be able to present the speakers today and introduce the webinar and the research. We were just kind of laughing amongst ourselves that we first started this conversation about doing a focus group with SNEB members. It was originally supposed to be done in San Diego in 2020. But of course, that conference didn't happen like in San Diego like it was planned. So it's exciting to kind of see the results now, knowing how much work has gone into doing this research. So just welcome to everyone today. So a little bit of housekeeping. I'm going to put a link in the chat block for today's slides. And would appreciate if you could, if you wanted to download those and follow along with the presentation. We will take questions at the end of the presentation, so please type those in the chat or question block. I'll also let you know there are four poll questions during the presentation, so there'll be opportunities to answer those questions as well as comment in the chat on your perspectives on those questions as well. And then when we close the webinar today, there'll be a short survey that pops up, and we appreciate your feedback on this session as, and as always, ideas on future SNEB webinars. And then watch for email follow-up, should reach you hopefully by Friday of this week with the link to the recording and the handout. And I believe we already have the CEU certificate for this one approved. Yes, good news. The CEU approval process has changed, and so some of our webinars we still owe people certificates, but I know in this case the certificate will be with your email that it comes on Friday. So I will turn things over to our panelists and introduce Fanfan Wu, who will introduce the rest of the speakers.
Thank you so much, Rachel, and thank you so much, SNEB, for this opportunity to do a webinar today. And thank you all as attendees to join today's webinar. My name is Fanfan Wu. I'm a social scientist working at the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, known as FDA, Center for Food Safety and Applied Nutrition, CFSAN. I have with me my colleague Kathleen Yu, who's also a social scientist at FDA CFSAN, joining today. And we're very honored to also have Robin McKinnon as the Senior Advisor for Nutrition Policy at CFSAN to join our presentation today. So today we want to provide an overview of FDA's work in nutrition and want to share the findings from a recent FDA focus group study with nutrition educators. So first we have the nutrition educator competency slide with items listed here, which you can find on the slides we shared. Richard just sent the link. And we also have the disclosures. None of us has any actual potential conflict of interest in relation to this presentation. So the learning objectives for today's webinar, you will be able to compare the work of different types of nutrition educators by the end of the webinar and identify FDA's role in nutrition education and also identify FDA's educational resources, which are publicly available and free. That can be helpful to both nutrition educators and nutrition educators' clients. little outline of our presentation today. We first will have Robin to do an introduction of FDA's role in food and nutrition, and then I will take over to provide a very brief introduction of CIFSIAN social scientist in the consumer studies branch and the kinds of work we do. Then we'll move on. Kathleen and I will jointly present on the focus group that both of us conducted together with nutrition educators and share the findings and next steps. So with that, I'd love to turn the table to Rob McKinnon at the end of the slide to take over to provide the overview of FDA's responsibilities.
Great. Rob. Thank you so much, Fanfan. And good afternoon to everybody joining, or good morning, depending on wherever you are. I'm so glad to join with you today. I'm, as Fanfan mentioned, I'm Robin McKinnon. I'm the Senior Advisor for Nutrition Policy at FDA Center for Food Safety and Applied Nutrition, or CIFSAN. And just to note, we're currently undergoing a proposed reorganization, bringing together several different organizations, different offices within FDA, and as part of that proposal that's being reviewed right now, CIFSAN would become part of the FDA Human Foods Program. Some have described this as a once-in-a-generation reorganization. And to note that the importance of our nutrition initiatives within the Human Foods Program is being recognized with an internal FDA Nutrition Center of Excellence to be established. Which would help elevate and even further strengthen our nutrition portfolio. But the mission would remain the same. We're responsible for the safety and labeling of about 80% of the US food supply and work closely, of course, with our federal partners on those efforts, including CDC, the NIH, and the USDA. And if we can go to the next slide. In the US, so despite the best efforts of many of the folks joining here today, most Americans' diets are not aligned with dietary recommendations. Many are low in intakes of recommended food groups like vegetables and fruits, whole grains and dairy. And the majority exceed recommendations for nutrients that are recommended to limit, like added sugars, like saturated fat. Almost 90% exceed recommended daily limits for sodium. But this slide shows a conceptual framework of our activities on nutrition as a science-based public health agency. So our work has a robust science base as a foundation, and then we apply our regulatory tools like regulations or guidances or working with stakeholders, educational tools, with two main goals in mind. So providing consumers with information and also working directly with the food industry to encourage healthier options, with the overall goal of improving public health. And of course, then this is an iterative process. One example of the tools that we have available to us, a good example is with artificial trans fats or partially hydrogenated oils. Some might remember that in 2006, trans fat was required to be declared on the nutrition facts label. And as a result of that labeling change, intake of these artificial trans fats, PHOs, dropped about 80%, so 80%. And then we've since taken additional regulatory actions, such that these artificial trans fats, partially hydrogenated oils, have been effectively removed from the food supply, likely averting tens of thousands of cases of heart disease and stroke. So that's an example of the types of tools that we're able to utilize in support of improving public health. So on the next slide, if you go to our role in nutrition, we have a number of newer initiatives underway. Of course, I've mentioned already the nutrition facts label. Some other recent examples have been the requirements to label calories in restaurants and other covered establishments. But here are some of our newer initiatives. No doubt many folks here today are aware that the White House in 2022 released a national strategy on hunger, nutrition, and health, which highlights within that, of course, that's a whole of government approach and a number of different actions to help reduce, to eliminate hunger and reduce diet-related disease. But within that national strategy, that highlights a number of FDA initiatives, like developing a science-based standardized front-of-package labeling scheme. Also updating the criteria and developing a symbol for the nutrient content claim healthy, and also developing revised voluntary sodium reduction targets for industry to support lowering the amount of sodium in the food supply. So not only are these powerful tools, we're operating within a much broader context, working across the federal government and beyond, so whole of government, whole of society, as part of this overall national strategy on hunger, nutrition, and health. And I also want to highlight the critical work of our colleagues in consumer studies, and so both Fanfan and Kathleen, but also others in the group there. The work is so critical in supporting the regulatory decision making, and then also in our outreach and education efforts more generally. And more recently, we've been working very closely together with our consumer studies team, working with focus groups and an experimental study on front of package labeling. But today we'll be highlighting their work and learning from the nutrition educator community. And so with that, I will turn it back to you, Fanfan. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Robin, for that overview. So as Robin mentioned, both Kathleen and I are on this team called Consumer Studies Branch. And FDSFC houses a group of social scientists like Kathleen and I. We are training different areas like psychology, sociology, economics, nutritional sciences, public health, and et cetera. As a group, we conduct social science research that covers both nutrition and food safety topics. And social science research really is being used to help inform the soundness and effectiveness of FDA's action by investigating how consumers and other stakeholders really perceive, understand, and react to SFCN's public information, education, policies, and regulatory actions. And at Consumer Studies, we conduct both qualitative research and quantitative research. For qualitative research, we use focus groups. And today, you will see that we will introduce, we'll provide some details about a focus group study we recently conducted with nutrition educators. We also use interviews and recent years social media data collection to collect consumer data. We also conduct quantitative research. Usually we use experiments and also surveys, both national representative surveys or online consumer panel surveys to collect consumer data as well. So today we're going to talk about some details about one of the research projects we have recently done, which is the focus groups with nutrition educators. The purpose of the research were twofold. First, we wanted to better understand nutrition educators' experiences with delivering nutrition education to their clients. Secondly, we wanted to further strengthen FDA's communication with and support of nutrition educators. In order to do so, here are the research questions we had. We wanted to learn who do nutrition educators serve, how do nutrition educators interact with their clients, how do nutrition educators teach, what do they teach, and what materials do nutrition educators use? And by answering these questions, and because FDA also regulate new nutrition facts label and updated nutrition facts label back in 2016, as Robin mentioned, we wanted to use this research to also learn how do nutrition educators teach the nutrition facts label. Additionally, we wanted to know what challenges nutrition educators face. And by answering all these questions, ultimately, we wanted to know how can FDA better support nutrition educators' work. So next, going into methods. We conducted a total of 24 online focus groups with nutrition educators in different settings. And here in this table, you can see the different segments that we did. So we first we had 10 groups, we called it 10 groups with SNAP Ed and FNAP nutrition educators. And we recruited these nutrition educators through five states listed here: Maryland, Texas, North Carolina, California, and Wisconsin. We also conducted four focus groups with WIC educators, and these educators were recruited nationally, and these groups were also conducted online. We did four groups with retail dietitians because this population has been expanding, and we also did national recruit for these dietitians. We did two groups with hospital dietitians, and to be specific, those are hospital outpatient dietitians, and we also did national recruit for those groups. And last but not least, we did four groups with mixed educators. And by saying mixed educators, we're meaning any types of educator, really. And while we're conducting these groups, we're trying to focus on the types of educators that were not covered in the previous segmentations. And you can see that we did our recruitment and conducted three groups through educators recruited by SNEB. And really a huge shout out to Rachel and SNEB for helping us with recruitment and all the planning. As Rachel mentioned, it went back to 2020 before the pandemic. And then we also conducted one group with mixed educators recruited through SOFI, the Society of Public Health Education. And here, I do want to flag that due to the nature of this research, we didn't do a random sampling. It's really, we were trying to recruit nutrition educators that met our criteria. And now, we should have a polling question here. Rachel, can you please pull out the polling question?
I can see some answers coming in.
Awesome.
Let's just get another second or two if you have not had a chance to answer. All right, it looks like that's got quite a few of us, so hold on a second and I will share the results.
Great. So we don't have any retail dietitians joining today, but we do have a big chunk of SNAP and FNAP educators, some WIC educators, hospital and healthcare educators, and other type of educators. See instructor in community college, higher education. Perfect. Thank you guys so much. And there's also program manager for online graduate program in nutrition education. Thank you guys for that polling question. So we have a good mix of different types of nutrition educators doing the frontline work and also the back end kind of research. Now, on this slide, we want to quickly show the participant characteristics. This table is quite busy, so you don't have to read it. We just want to highlight a few things. As I mentioned, we didn't do randomized sampling. It's just participants who met our study criteria. So this table is not reflective of the entire nutrition educator population. On the left, we list the participant characteristics. And on the right, with the columns, we have the all groups and also the information by different segmentation listed out separately. Now, let's take a look at these characteristics and focusing on the all column, the very first column on the right. So for education, most of our participants had at least a bachelor's degree or were raw. We had 44% with bachelor's degree and 46% with advanced degree, which was not surprising. The majority of our participants were females, over 93% were females. And in terms of age, we got educators from all different age categories. And in terms of race ethnicity, our participants were mostly non-Hispanic white Caucasian. And you can see that's especially true for the retail dietitian category, while for our other kinds of nutrition educators, it's more diverse kind of, the participants we've talked to. In terms of credentials, we had about half of the educators being registered dietitian. That's especially true for retail dietitian and hospital dietitians. For other categories, we have more other folks who didn't have an RD. Now, a little more details about the focus groups. We did the data collection in August 2021 to July 2022, so really throughout a period of time. And we conducted all groups online through Zoom webinar. Each group lasted for about 90 minutes, and we had about 4 to 6 participants in each group. And for the rest of this presentation, we'll be referring to our participants of these focus groups as educators. The topics that these educators discussed during these focus groups include the general topics, such as who do nutrition educators serve, how do they interact with their clients, what do they teach, and what materials they use. Then we had a portion focusing on the education related to nutrition facts label. As I mentioned, FDA just updated nutrition facts label. The final rule was published 2016 and did the nutrition campaign on the new nutrition facts label. So we wanted to learn about the nutrition education related to nutrition facts label. Last but not least, we also had nutrition educators to talk about the challenges and lessons learned through their experience. So while we're going over the portion where we had educators discuss the education related to nutrition facts label, we showed our participants these materials that FDA developed, either on nutrition facts labels and fact sheets, the screenshots of campaigns, and also social media toolkit, and the general health educator nutrition toolkit. And during the focus group, we had them to look at these to see if they have ever used it or they have ever come across these materials. And Rachel, I believe we have 2 polling questions here. Can you please display them? Thank you.
So first question about, have you seen these FDA materials on the nutrition facts label? Got most people answered. Let's share this out.
Oh, great. We have about 55% who answer yes, 25% answer no, and 20% said, I'm not sure. Now you all have seen this. Toward the end of the slides, we have these resources also linked, provided in links, so you will be able to access these if you're interested.
And our next question is, have you used these materials? I think we've gotten most everyone answered here, so let's share that.
So we have 47% answering yes and 42% answering no, and 11% answering I'm not sure. I saw a comment saying that we should have included some of them answer. That's a great idea. So I'm assuming that some of you answered maybe yes for that option. And thank you for this information. This is really helpful to know. All right, with that, we're going to go into the findings of this research. And I want to turn this over to my colleague and also co-PI of this project, Kathleen. Kathleen, please take over.
Thank you, Fun. And thank you for continuing to advance the slides. So wanted to echo Robin and Fun, first of all, and say that I'm honored and pleased to be able to share the findings of these focus groups with you all today. And also echo just what a privilege it was for Fun and me to even field this research, being able to hear firsthand from you all. Those who did participate and other nutrition educators just really emphasized how important this work is and just how much we appreciate all that nutrition educators in this study and what all of you all do on a day-to-day basis. So the next few slides, we'll go over what we learned from the nutrition educators in this study and specifically what I will be talking about will respond to the first 6 research questions that Fun had outlined earlier that detail the experiences of our nutrition educators that we talked to in 2021 and 2022. Thanks, Fun. So on this slide, the first research question was, who do our nutrition educators serve? When we look at nutrition educators as a whole here, kind of detailed at the top, we see that they serve and work with everyone. But when we look at the different types of nutrition educators, as detailed in that table at the bottom of the slide, we get a better sense of how these educators serve different populations. So let's take a look at some of those demographic breakdowns. In terms of age, nutrition educators' clients span the life cycle from infants through older adults and everybody in between. That said, some educators, particularly due to the nature of the programs that they're in, serve more specific populations, as exemplified by the WIC educators who serve infants, children, mothers, and other caregivers. Now, in terms of income, here too, we see a great spread that is better explained by the segmentations in that table. So we'll see here that the nutrition assistance program educators, such as SNAP Ed, FNAP, and WIC educators, serve primarily low-income populations. In contrast, our retail and hospital dietitians have a wider variety of clientele that is based more on geographic location and service area. And finally, one of the last demographic highlights demographics we wanted to highlight is that in terms of race ethnicity, educators share that they serve a variety of clients who represent different race and ethnic backgrounds. The educators in our study, though, did most often mention Hispanic or Latino populations and those whose primary language was not English. And then I think, Funfun, you might have a quote here. Yeah. Saying we've got over 23 different languages spoken by our patients. So it's a pretty diverse group. And that was just one nutrition educator's quote. In addition, we also heard that nutrition educators serve primarily, not primarily, but one of the most common ones were also Black or African-American clients, as well as non-Hispanic white clients. Next slide, please. Thank you. So the next research question we asked was, how do nutrition educators interact with their clients? So the previous one was, who do they serve? Now we wanted to know how they worked with them. So what we found out was that nutrition educators tended to kind of favor one type of setting. So it was either or setup, either a group or a one-on-one setup, with the exception of our retail dietitians who employed a mix. So for example, you'll see in the table, our SNAP Ed, FNAP, educators did primarily group classes, and then our WIC and hospital dietitians focused primarily one-on-one. And then again, as I mentioned, our retail dietitians tended to do a little bit of both. In terms of approach, or in other words, mode, educators mentioned that they almost nearly all of our educators mentioned employing a hybrid approach to teaching their clients. So that was the hybrid of both in-person and online to deliver their nutrition education. The WIC educators had the additional feature of employing phone calls in their one-on-one discussions. I should also note that our educators talked also about the difference between active and passive education. And a lot of our educators talked about employing active education, which entails real-time engagement and a dialogue of topics to really ensure understanding of what's being taught. Educators did also note, however, that they occasionally did employ passive education, which to kind of supplement all of that, which included offering online course recordings, directing clients to websites, and also using social media to post and share information. And finally, given that we were fielding these focus groups in 2021 and 2022, we did want to know how the COVID-19 pandemic impacted how our educators interacted with their clients. So most of our educators mentioned that they had to switch from in-person education to online. Many of those educators found this transition to be helpful because it helped to expand their reach and help them serve more clients. However, a few did say that they, you know, unfortunately did see fewer clients actually in that switch, largely because those clients weren't able to adapt well or had limited resources in terms of internet and technology. So when we asked kind of a follow-up of how the educators felt about this change in mode, most expressed general kind of positive interest in continuing at least part of their education with their clients online. That being said, our WIC educators did mention that they were more inclined to return to in-person compared to the other segments. And this was mostly because they had trouble connecting with parents remotely in the remote one-on-one settings, because there could be distractions during those phone calls. There might be disruptions in internet or phone service. And also it was difficult to not be able to see the children in person for the assessments. Next slide, please. So once we had an understanding of our educators' client base and their interactions, we wanted to know more about what did they talk with their clients about. So here we've got the kind of most salient topics or themes listed in descending order. So some topics we just want to highlight very quickly are the two at the top. So we've got diet and nutrition, which includes healthy eating, you know, overall what is, you know, what diets are out there, just kind of also what's considered general or basic nutrition. So talking about sodium, sugar, or fats, reading the labels, learning about My Plate, and also eating for particular conditions. Also within diet nutrition, there were discussions of the different food groups like fruits and vegetables, what kinds of different water and beverages to learn about and things like that. And then the second most salient topic revolved around cooking or shopping. And so there was a lot of discussion around meal planning, grocery shopping, and food safety. Next slide, please. So we then wanted to learn where our nutrition educators got their materials from, either materials mostly as is, or what information that they got, where they got their information to kind of populate their own materials. So what we learned is most of our educators used information from USDA, other professional organizations, universities and extension offices, FDA, woo, and other government agencies. We did also learn, though, that even in the creation or adoption of these materials, a lot of times our educators required approval before they used it. So we were able to use it. So that was very helpful information for us. When we asked our nutrition educators what format they preferred, overwhelmingly our participants said that they preferred paper handouts, and said especially for their older clients, it was easier for them to hand out and have something tangible to refer to, and also something easier to take home and follow up with. Our WIC educators in particular, on top of mentioning paper handouts, also said that they used text messaging a lot when communicating with their clients. So can you pop up the next quote? Thank you, Fun. The quote here that we wanted to highlight says, "I've been finding that clients like texting if it's a picture of a document. When we send a whole lot of information, then we send usually by email, they don't even look at it. But if we text them a picture, they're on board." And then other formats in addition to paper and text messaging include email, social media, website links, and other interactive formats like games and cooking demonstrations. Next slide, please. All right. So as Robin and Fenfen had mentioned, we all were particularly interested in learning whether and how nutrition educators taught the nutrition facts label to their clients, especially since at this time when we were fielding these focus groups, the updated nutrition facts label was being implemented around this time. So most said that they were familiar with the updates to the nutrition facts label, and nearly all educators said that they taught their clients how to use a nutrition facts label, which maps back to a research question two slides ago. One note is that our WIC educators typically did not, but it's worth noting that our WIC educators provide education based on the assessed needs of their clients. Our educators said that they taught the nutrition facts label because they believed knowing how to use it was a helpful skill for their clients. So some of the topics that they discussed with their, that they considered as most important in the nutrition facts label were serving size, sugar, and fiber. And then kind of in contrast or in comparison, a lot of the topics on the nutrition facts label that our educators received questions on the most from clients were sugars, carbohydrates, and percent DV. And when we asked our educators what topic did their clients kind of struggle with the most, a lot of them talked about needing a little bit more work on percent DV. Next slide, please. Sorry, I might have a lag on my end. Fenfen? Oh, there we go. The final research question that I'll be talking about today asked our nutrition educator participants on what challenges they encounter in delivering a nutrition educator to their clients.
This was classified primarily into three groupings. So the first talked about resource challenges. A lot of educators talked about being stretched thin, having a lack of funding, and having difficulty with scheduling or timing some of their educational sessions. They also, particularly as it pertained to the educational materials, spoke to a great need for materials being translated into different languages, which ties again back to our findings in the first research question that discussed the different populations that nutrition educators serve, and the primary one being people who did not speak English as a first language. We've got a few quotes to pop up here. Fun. Thank you. And one on the left speaks to it being really hard to convey really simple nutrition information in the different languages. So this particular educator reverted to using pictures very simply, like a happy face, yes, frowny face, no. And that's gotten the message across, but we really need to do a better job of having materials and simplify to other languages. Another educator said to us, I would like to say a lack of diversity in their recommendations. When people don't see themselves in the types of foods that you're recommending, many times the clients will just tune them out. And then in addition to this first category of research challenges, resource challenges, our educators mentioned also having trouble, challenges with engaging clients, and in particular, combating misinformation from the internet, social media, influencers, and friends and family. And then there were also some challenges tied to having to quickly adapt to a different education mode as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. And I believe, Fun, we have another poll here.
Yes.
And in this case, if you don't resonate with these challenges, feel free to put your comments into the chat. We'll do just another couple seconds to let everyone get there. I have a feeling some folks are typing. I'll go ahead and share the poll. And let's see what folks might be typing, because there was some consensus here.
Wow. Well, this is just so nice to see that you guys do resonate with these experiences. So seems like our research is somewhat representative of what you guys have been experiencing. And we see something in the chat. We have done similar focus group work with FNAP educators, specifically, and have received the same feedback. That's really great to know. And Teresa, would love to connect later just to compare notes about what we've learned and the areas that FDA can better support nutrition educators later. Thank you guys so much. This is awesome. Thank you.
Okay, and I'll pass it back to you, Fun.
Thank you, Kathleen. So given all that, now summarizing everything up, all the previous research questions are leading to this one. We wanted to focus on the future and really figure out how can FDA better support nutrition educators' work. So first, we heard loud and clear that there are needs and requests for translated culturally inclusive and interactive materials. There are also requests materials for low literacy populations, because we've heard across board that if the materials were not really suitable or culturally inclusive for the specific population, it's not going to resonate with the clients. We also heard that there are needs, there's a distinction between materials for educators or the materials that's aimed for just clients or the general public to use. And there are different formats of materials that are needed. Handouts are certainly needed, but also social media posts, materials that allow for digital engagement. Those are quite important nowadays too. And we also heard that there are certain topics that educators might need more information on from FDA, specifically those information related to nutrition facts label. We heard that educators wanted to know more about specific topics or ingredients or percent DV. As you can see, percent DV is a topic that both the educator and their clients might have some questions on. And also information on other FDA regulated topics such as product labeling resources, claims, symbols on packages, allergen labeling, and nutrient content for produce. And last but not least, we heard that it's quite important for data dissemination and partnership when it comes to how we can encourage more nutrition educators to adopt FDA's materials. We heard overwhelmingly that partnering with implementing approving agency or individuals is quite important to for FDA to be able to incorporate the materials into a curriculum if there is one, and to encourage more use of FDA materials. Of course, we have been doing that with our assistant agencies, USDA, CDC, and other agencies, but we would love to keep doing that and figure out what more we can do in the future. So given that, some next steps we are internally discussing how FDA can use this research and its findings to better support nutrition educators, while also trying to further disseminate our findings, having some more discussions, and just like this one, using the platform SNEB provided for us. And really, we're so grateful for SNEB's help throughout this process. And to talk to more nutrition educators, we also did a poster at last year's SNEB's annual conference, and this is the poster and where you can find the abstract of the poster. There's a link, and of course, it's in the slides we shared. And last but not least, very important, as you can see on this busy slide, we have so many people and so many different organizations individuals helped us throughout this process. We have our internal staff from FDA who really support this process and this project. We also have our contractor who really deserves a shout out here, RTI, and folks at RTI who helped us to really plan out and collect data from this research, and we're in contact with SNEB and Rachel throughout this process as well. And again, SNEB, thank you so much for your help and your support. This is such important work, and we're very grateful, as Kathleen mentioned, that we get to conduct this research and really to connect with the nutrition educators and hear really firsthand what they are experiencing. And we've tuned into every focus group that we conducted, and we're just in awe of all the nutrition educators' work. The work is so important, and everyone's so passionate about the work. So thank you all nutrition educators. And now by doing these presentations, we're hoping that we're really providing the findings back to who helped us, and just to make sure that we're also sharing the findings. Out of curiosity, I wonder if anyone in the audience who actually have participated in one of the focus groups, if you don't mind, please let us know. And again, just thank you. Thank you. Last slide we have here, we have a slide with different resources, again, free and open to the public that you can use. And please check out these FDA resources for education materials and educators e-newsletter, specific information on nutrition facts label. And there's actually an FDA Citizens Nutrition Education Resource Library that covers both nutrition and food safety topics. So feel free to check them out. With that, I'd like to close the presentation and also open up to questions. And we're really looking forward to a dialogue here, questions and answers, and also discussions. Thank you all.
Coming back on camera. I saw that there was a question in the chat, a few questions in the chat. So I'll read them out loud, and then Funfun, do you want to take point, and then we can see if there is anything else. So the first question that we received that I saw was from Christina Lunsford. And the question was, in terms of what nutrition educators taught in their work, was how to approach behavior change mentioned?
I can jump in first, then Kathleen and Robin, please feel free to add. I think that's something we have heard maybe just occasionally. It's not the main topic that we have heard throughout the process. And I can put back to the slide that we had on the topics. I believe it's the topics and themes. I think it's covered in all these topics, but we didn't exactly probe on behavior change during our focus group. So there were maybe like once or twice it came up organically, but we didn't probe any further. I hope that answered your question, Christina.
Then we have the second question from Teresa. Has there been any work to harmonize education on MyPlate with a nutrition facts label? I think that's what you meant by food label, Teresa. Yes.
And I think this one really, Robin, do you want to take this one?
Actually, that we do have some combined education materials that link together the nutrition facts label and MyPlate. If you go to one of the websites that we have listed there on the new nutrition facts label, there is a combined fact sheet, but there's also other materials under our nutrition education resources that bring those two tools together. So yes, and we work closely with our partners from USDA on that. And looking ahead into the future, there's some folks may or may not be aware. One thing that I mentioned was an update to the nutrient content claim healthy. And that nutrient content claim, at least the proposed rule, which was issued the same day as the White House National Strategy Conference, we're also working on a final rule, aiming to issue that in the spring later this year. But that is very much emblematic, in line with the Dietary Guidelines for Americans, food groups to promote, at least that was the proposal, as well as Nutrients to Limit. So that very naturally aligns with MyPlate as well. So thank you. Great question.
Thank you so much, Robin.
And I believe there were some comments. I think one, there was a comment that was in addition to the poll question, if the challenges resonated with you. And then one particular educator said that when a doctor offers quick fix answers like medication, and they're respected more than nutrition educators. And certainly, you know, this discussion of who's kind of seen as the expert is certainly something that we've heard in a few of our focus groups. There's another comment that asks, or just kind of posits, that if the influx of immigrants would further challenge the language barrier and demand of services, we try to reach a broader audience. I think, you know, we did hear that when we spoke to our educators, kind of that research question number one about like, who do you serve? And a lot of it, you know, participants did, our nutrition educators did speak to having, you know, a need for greater resources as the demographics of the populations in their areas changed.
And certainly, and if I can add comments in, Kathleen, mm-hmm. the number of the people asked about additional materials in other languages.
Yeah, yeah. And I think the other day we were just talking about this. I think there are, during the focus, we've heard there are so many languages that educators actually mentioned that the clients they serve, the different languages that were spoken. And recently we heard there were like even more added to that list, not through the focus group, but through other channels. So definitely there are immigrants, there are other populations, and there's really a need of diverse or culturally inclusive materials. It is not just a matter of translation. It's more, it goes beyond translation, because it has to be culturally appropriate to the audience. If it's well translated but it doesn't cover the population, like the, for example, specific population, their diet habit or the kind of things they eat, then it doesn't really work for that audience. So there are really a lot of different factors that need to be considered. Okay, going from that, I saw the Teresa had a comment about the interactive food label on the website is a really great resource. Thank you so much. I wonder if there's a way to repackage it to be more user-friendly for audience we serve. So if I could get a clarification, do you mean like you take that and then kind of make updates on top of it and try to reach your audience? If that's the case, Robin, can you take this one?
Could you restate that just again?
Yeah, so Teresa mentioned about the interactive food label on our website is a really good resource. And she wondered if there is a way to repackage this interactive food label to be more user-friendly for the audience they serve.
Well, it's a really interesting question. I'd be interested to learn more about what that exactly could look like. So maybe we could invite Teresa and anybody else who would to say more or email us afterwards with what that might look like. Is that additional fact sheets, or is it a way to change or offer another type of version of the interactive label? It'd just be helpful to know what would be envisioned, but great idea.
Thank you so much to Teresa. We have our contact information at the last slide, I think. So if you could reach out to us, or I think we also have, you also shared your email address. So let's definitely touch base afterwards. And the next comment I saw in the chat, material specific to those with diabetes or trying to manage their blood sugar. I believe we do have specific information on that's targeting at different population. And we also, Robin, if I'm not wrong, I believe on our website, we have some information related to that.
There is, yeah. I mean, one thing to keep in mind is that the label is for the general population and for everybody. And part of the requirement is for the general population for us to provide labeling. That said, there are often some really key information that's available on the label to people with certain conditions like diabetes, like heart disease, et cetera. So the information is there, and then there can be opportunities to tailor the educational materials for specific populations. So on occasion, we have information more general, but then there are also sometimes more specific information that other organizations can also add to as well. For instance, the American Heart Association, the American Diabetes Association, the American Cancer Society, et cetera.
And I saw the next comment in chat, will FDA be creating materials on eating healthy, but also more sustainable foods?
Yeah, maybe that's one I can take. So as I mentioned, we're in the process of updating the nutrient content claim healthy to have that information on. We often do get questions on sustainability, and that's of great interest to people. And so that very much appreciate the question. We are working with federal colleagues on efforts to reduce food waste, for instance. So there are efforts around date labeling materials. I know that the USDA and some other federal partners as well are sometimes looking at, and that other organizations sometimes have different marks of related to sustainability, but there is nothing required from the FDA. But we are working across the federal government on initiatives that relate to that topic more broadly.
Thank you so much, Robin. And I saw the last comment in the chat from Barbara. Are you using AI to help with translation? What a great idea. Maybe we could explore that.
Maybe we could. I don't think we're exploring that right now, but welcome the suggestion.
Are there presently guidelines in the label about restricting sugar or giving specific guidelines? And would it be possible to put sugar into teaspoons instead of grams?
That is one. That is, thank you for that question. A lot of people have that question about teaspoons, and there are education materials, like from the Dietary Guidelines folks, for instance, that do, that they do the translation. We did address this in the nutrition facts label. So that information that is required now on the nutrition facts label as of that was in the final rule in 2016. It was the compliance date was in 2021. So that there's a requirement to declare added sugars, and there's also the percent daily value that's required. So the daily value for a 2000 calorie diet is about 50 grams. So we're looking to the Dietary Guidelines recommends limiting your added sugars to under 10% of your calories. And so you have the daily value information that's for the serving of the food. But specifically for teaspoons, the challenge there, and this was addressed directly in the nutrition facts rule, is that sometimes sugar, it's a volume metric versus a weight metric. So if you have something like corn syrup or honey or something like that, those are added sugars, but the sugar content differs and doesn't necessarily translate. The same teaspoon measure doesn't translate for table sugar as it does for, say, corn syrup. And so you wouldn't be giving, that wouldn't be giving accurate information to consumers if it was just in teaspoons because of the way that added sugars can exist. So that's the reason for it appearing in grams and the percent daily value. But there's great opportunity to provide that translation to consumers with teaspoons or cubes of sugar in the materials that you provide.
Thank you so much, Robin. Kathleen, do you want to chime in?
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I saw that the same question popped up in the Q&A, so just wanted to acknowledge that, and hopefully that also was addressed in Robin's response. Thank you.
And by that, I think we have addressed all questions and comments. And if there are any more, feel free to jump in. We'd appreciate this opportunity to hear that you are working with the frontline workers. Thank you. And we're really honored to be able to do that. And your willingness to share your time with us. This is really important, running program at the state level. Thank you so much, Teresa. This is really good to know. And really, we, through all this process, we are just so in awe with all the nutrition educators and the kind of work nutrition educators are doing. So our intention is to keep sharing the results, the findings, trying to compare notes with other folks who have done research, and also trying to look at what we can further do. Oh, Rachel.
Are you going somewhere?
Oh. So I'm stepping down as SNEB's executive director, but I'm going to help the team through the transition. So, yeah, that's very kind. Thank you. I'll miss all you too. Hopefully you'll still see me pop up from time to time as I help the team.
You surely will be missed, Rachel. And really, thank you so much. Rachel has been the main contact person for us throughout this process and has been just more than supportive. So we're very grateful that for all your help and support, and also the opportunity to have the poster at last year's SNEB conference and also this webinar. So
I know, I'm so excited that we got to see this come full circle, and it looks like there's conversations that will continue. So thank you all so much for doing the work and sharing the results with us today. I will go ahead and wrap things up. Just a reminder, there's a short survey when we close the webinar, and appreciate your feedback on this session and ideas for other sessions. We can certainly share those out to the FDA team to see if there's any follow-up webinars. And then watch for an email on Friday that should include the recording, your CEU certificate for attending live, as well as the handout for today. And remind you, there are more webinars on the SNEB calendar. Journal clubs will resume again this coming Monday. And Journal Club is looking at nutrition educators in the field. So there's authors that are sharing their results from the work that they've done in their communities. And then I'll I don't want to forget to mention that registration is open for the SNEB International Conference, which will be in Knoxville, Tennessee this year. And the discounted registration lasts through May 1. So registering early will get you the best rate. And then we are on the University of Tennessee campus. So there are a couple of options for hotel stays, one of which is to stay at the dorm. So we look forward to seeing everyone in Knoxville or back online for another webinar. Thank you all very much.
Thank you all for joining.